Okay, we're in Testament base. Yeah, moving in. Testament base. No problem. There you go. Testament base. We are up to the words V'yanatzel es Mitzrayim. Actually, we did see that. We spoke about how the Mitzrayim was completely cleared out. We're now up to the first words of the line, which is Pasuk. Ekya, which means some sense Hashem's name, so that's how you're supposed to pronounce it. That I am what I am, or I'll be what I will be. So that's what the pasuk says, and you see on the side it says Shem, Sefer Shemos, Gimel, those are the third parak in Sefer Shemos. So what exactly was this conversation that Hashem had with Moshe Rabbeinu? Armalei Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe, and he said,
what line do you want?
We're about approximately 12 lines from the top.
Of the seven of Bays?
Testament Bays, yes. So it says, I am what I am, or I'll be what I'll be.
What's his name?
Right? Which is the ultimate level, ultimate name of Hashem. So Hashem was saying to Moshe, Lech Amr Lehem Yisrael, go and tell the Jewish people that Ani Hayisimachem B'Shibud Zeh. Tell them that I will be with them in this particular Shibud Mitzrayim, the slavery and the bondage of being in Egypt. I'm with them at that point. And also remind them, Ani Eyeimachem B'Shibud Malchios. Remind them that all future troubles and misfortunes will be with them too. So Moshe, who was very wise, turned to Hashem and said, Ribbono Shel Dai Letzar B'Shaita. It's enough, the problems that they're having now. Why do you want to overburden them, telling them not only they have problems now in Mitzrayim, but when they leave Mitzrayim, they're going to have more problems. Don't tell people about the problems that may be, and that will be, even in the future. Let people deal with what they have now. They don't have enough fuel in their tank to be able to handle all that stress.
I'll pile it on.
So Amalei Kodesh Baruch Hu, so Hashem said, Leich Amalehem, I will be the one who will send you out from there, which implies that what Hashem is saying is, okay, you're right. Let them worry about future problems. You're right, Moshe. You're a smart guy, and I guess I'm not. So the Marsha tells us. Marsha asks the obvious question: is what are you talking about? He's saying that Hashem didn't know that people can't handle this. And all of a sudden, the great knowledgeable man, Moshe Rabbeinu, can come up with this great idea. So if you look in the Marsha for a moment, I can entertain you by looking at the Marsha, which is page 6.
Very good.
All the way in the back.
Yesterday was his yard site.
Who's this?
Marsha.
Oh, so it's very appropriate to be learning the Marsha at this point then. Page 6.
Where do you get all your trivia from? It's not trivia, it's in the Modia. You don't get the Modia either?
Page 6 is an English number.
No, I'm saying the Modiyah, because I haven't really read Hebrew that well.
Oh, so you should come to my class tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
I'm not a novice. I'm just saying, I can't do as well as I read really newspaper.
Anyway, we have two columns here. It's on the right side. Good evening.
Good evening.
There you go, doctor. We have on the right column where it says test on the Aleph and it's on the Beis, and then you'll see it says in bold, this Gemara we're learning, Ekya Asher Ekya, Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu. If you just go a few lines lower than that, which is the first words on the line is She'omer Lei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She'omer Lei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an acronym which doesn't make it any easier. But that's where we are. It's only a few lines we're going to see in the Marsha. But it's going to end by the word Shelo Yomru, which is a new quote of the Gemara. But we're above that, a few lines above that. Alan, you see where that is?
No, who is it?
Three lines above Shelo.
Three lines above Shelo. Yeah.
Which Shelo?
Page 6 in the back in the Marsha.
Three lines above Shelo. Three lines.
It's approximately 42 lines from the bottom. All right. So Omalei Kadosh Baruch Hu. What was this? He said, Atolo Hivanta Devari, you did not understand my words. Kigam ani kavanti lakach, because I also had this intention. In other words, it wasn't, because the Shach of Atari, the Gemara, it sounds like Hashem said, tell them, I'll be with you now, I'll be with you in the future. Hashem says, and Moshe's like, no, don't tell them about the future problems. So Hashem says, oh yeah, you're right. Hashem obviously knew that. But Moshe didn't understand when he said the words that he said, that that's what he also originally intended. Right? Lo havanta divari ki gam ani kavanti l'kach. I also, Hashem, had that intention.
Intention of what? Of not telling them?
Of only telling them that I'm with you now.
He just told Moshe what's going to be, but they shouldn't tell them. Shouldn't tell them.
Right. So let's see what the Marsha says. Ani modia, I will let them know. Eye mochem b'tzara acheres, about letting them know about future problems. Lehem, but that's to you. But to them, ani modia el kosam of Israel. Eye. When it comes to us. When it comes to all of them, that we're only going to tell them the problems now. So the great leaders, the leaders can know all the problems, the future problems, all issues. They can handle it, but the simple person, that's too much. So that's what Hashem said. Hashem was only telling Moshe Rabbeinu that Hashem will always be with them, but he should, of course, only respond, tell the Bnei Israel that he will be, that Hashem will be with them during this present issue, this present goal, this present shibud. And then the Marsha says, "Now tizkur lehem sar acheres, do not acknowledge, not reckon, let them know about other problems. Behu mevor, and this is something which is explained. She havatiach lanu akadosh baruch hu b'shem havaya, that Hashem is promising us with His name. Shanu devekim bo, that we will be attached to Him. V'yishalanu Hashem b'chol hashibudim, that Hashem will always be with us by all of our exiles and problems and servitudes. V'lo yabalanu hesed v'kilion chas Hashem b'orech golos, that a person shouldn't think that we're just lost and we are just completely forgotten about, especially during the lengthy golos that we're currently in. So the Marsha is telling us that that's just a comforting thing to know, but certainly Hashem never intended that Moshe should repeat all this information to the general populace.
How can the Marsha know what Hashem meant?
Presumably, the way I understand it is because there's no way that Hashem was wrong and that Moshe was outsmarted him. So the Marsha understood it must be that's Hashem never intended for Moshe to say everything, but that's perhaps
There are occasions where Moshe gave Hashem advice which he took. For example, Yashkoach, Shabbat Aluchos,
right?
And that he made an extra day, Shloshi Megbola instead of two, and that he left Sapporo. Hashem thought that Moshe did the right thing.
Right.
He even said Yashkoach to the Shvirz Aluchos.
Right.
He could take advice from him.
This Hebrew had no problem with. It's the modern Hebrew in the newspaper that have problem with.
Oh, okay.
So stick to this.
We'll stick to this evening. Okay. All right. So anyway, that's what the Marsha says on this pasuk, and I said on March 14th this past year, on March 14th, that story a few years back. On March 14th, I was sitting with some teenage kids who are. I was a big NCS wire in Connecticut, and they said, Rabbi, today's National Pi Day. And what does that mean? They said, well, March 14th, 314. March 14th is National Pi Day. And then I heard an interesting thought that pi, which represents that, which of a circle, which is eternal, which never ends, and there's no beginning, there's no end. That's really what Hashem is. Hashem is eternal, it doesn't end. And this name of Eke, Asher Eke, is the all-encompassing name of Hashem. He is, He will be. That's the all-encompassing name. And if you would look up that pasuk in Sefer Shemos, we see on the side the parak is parak Gimel, and the pasuk is pasuk Yadalad, 314. So you look that up. That's where this is the only time you see Hashem's name in the Torah like this, and it's 314. Okay. With that said, let's move on. That's a little. Cute little thought. So that's Pi Day. Anyway, Aneni, that's the Yudvar Torah for when March 14th rolls around. Aneni Hashem Aneni. Moving on to a different topic, which is actually something which we talked about before, is in the source of Shas, you can see, helps us out. We're back on Testament Base, the source of Shas, you just follow it along, and it says in brackets, L'el Vav Amud Aleph. So this Gemara, which we're having now in Testament Beis, we already saw previously on a few blad before. So the Gemara does that often for various reasons. So the Pasuk says, Aneni Hashem Aneni, with regard to Eliyahu Navi, who's on Har Carmel, that he was being confronted by the people of Ovid Avodah Zarah, and the people that worship an idol called Baal, and they wanted to show that their idol was powerful, and of course Eliyahu wanted to create the ultimate great Kiddush Hashem, that their idols have no power, and HaKadosh Baruch of course is the only power. So therefore when he turned to Hashem, he prayed, Aneni Hashem Aneni, answer me Hashem Aneni. So the Gemara asked, and as well as here, Omer Rava, Vohu Lom Omer Eliyahu Aneni Be'ez Pa'amim. What is the significance? Why does he have to say, answer me Hashem, answer me? Let's just say it two times. What's this? Just answer me Hashem once. Must be that what he was doing, by the fact that he said, answer me, he says it twice because there's two things that he wanted Hashem to answer. Malamed comes to teach, Shiomer Eliyahu lifnei HaKadosh Baruch, this is what Eliyahu turned to God and asked. He said, Rabbanu Sha'olam, Master of the World, Aneini, first of all, answer me, Sheterid Eish min HaShemayim, Batoichel Kol Asher al Mizbeach, that the fire should come forth from the Shemayim, we should consume everything on the Mizbeach. The Aneini, also answer me, Shetasiach Daitam, that you should remove from their mindset, Kedish Lo Yomer Masik Shavim Heim. We don't want them to think the reason why this fire came miraculously from the heavens to consume this mizbech, and it's kshafim, it's masik kshafim, it's witchcraft, it's just witchcraft. That's what it was. So answer them also. It's not just enough that you'll do it, but remove it from their mind, the possibility of masik kshafim. Shnemar, as the pasuk says, v'yato anyu hisvus es liba machronis, you turn their hearts the other way. So therefore, this is what he was hoping, that these Rishayim would be able to change their mindset of thinking that it was Masik Shavim. We mentioned about 6 months ago, or so, maybe even longer, there was a Gemara, interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin, which discusses the idea of Masik Shavim, of different types of witchcraft. And the Gemara over there told us certain things that cannot possibly be Masik Shavim, cannot possibly be witchcraft. And it brought over, Mefarshim over there, which I said over, is such an interesting verb. The Pasuk is a Pasuk in Sefer Shemos that says, with regard to Mitzrayim and the various Makos, the Pasuk says, Lech el Paro baboker, this is in Perek Zion, go to Paro in the morning, Hini yatsa hamayimah, this water is going to change blood. And the staff in which turned to a snake, take in your hands. That's what the Pasuk says. So the Mefarshim asks, what does Hashem have to say? Take the staff. Just say, take the staff. That's what you're going to use to hit the water. What does it mean, take the staff, asher nepach l'nachash, that was turned into a snake? Of course, that's his only, he doesn't have a whole array of staffs. What does that mean? So it's brought down by Rabbi Yitzchak Levi Horowitz, that he says that when these snakes, the incident when one snake swallowed up the other, people were amazed. All the Khartoumim, the witch people were involved in black magic, they couldn't believe it. How was that possible? So they couldn't believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They believed everything was Masik Shafim. So how was it Masik Shafim? They looked at this and said, this really was not a staff originally that turned miraculously, turned into a snake, because a staff could turn into a snake, no problem. But it cannot, something which is not alive, which is a staff, when you turn into a snake, it doesn't have the capacity to turn it to swallow up something else. It has to be something which is a living source originally. So therefore, they felt this staff that swallowed up, this was really originally a snake. He walked into the palace as though it was a staff, but it was really a snake. And then when he turned it into a snake, that's how it originally was, that's why it could swallow it up. That's what people thought. So what Hashem told him to do was to take this very same staff, and I want you to take the staff and hit the water with it. That's how the Makkah happened. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us a very interesting thing, that for some reason, Masik Shafim, witchcraft, has no power on water. You, for some reason, that's what the Gemara says over there in Sanhedrin. That water has, there's no way you can affect anything. So therefore, what he was doing was two things. When he hit the water, he was showing that the Makkah of Dam was not through Kshafim, was not through witchcraft. But it also explains the Pasuk that the Mata Asher Nefach L'Nachash Tikach B'Yadecha. Take the same staff, because if you are hitting the water, it can't be Masik Shafim. This staff must be a real staff originally, because it was a snake, and then it turned into a staff. When you hit it, it shows that that was witchcraft, but it wouldn't have worked. So therefore, he says that that's the significance of how all these things, of why the Pasuk has to say it in that particular way. But with that said, the Chidah explains, the Chidah tells us that what did Eliyahu HaNavi do on this Mizbeach? If you read the Pesukim over there, it wasn't just that he prayed to Hashem that fire should come down, but the whole Mizbeach was saturated, was filled with water. Yeah. It was filled with water. The question is why? So one answer is to show the tremendous miracle that even if there's so much water, still the fire can come and it can consume on the Mizbeach. But the Chidah explains that's also what was his problem. He was afraid of Masik Shafin. So he knew that the people who were involved in witchcraft, they would see all the Mizbech filled with water, and they would know that it must be from Hashem, and therefore it could not be Masik Shafin. So that's how he explains the significance of why he said that this is the second Anani, his concern of Masik Shafin, and that's why he purposely saturated the Mizbech with water. Okay.
And Barod also had.
Barod what?
The Makkah of Barod had fire and water together.
Right. That's right.
But I have a problem with that. And that's that when we talk about the Makkot and the Mitzrayim,
yeah.
We say that when we came down to Kinim, that's when the Chachamim said Esfah Elohim Yin.
Right.
We're told that that's because the power of witchcraft doesn't have power over something the size of
Barod,
right. Something smaller than
right, right.
And there's no power over that. So if that's the case, then now we're saying that Kishuv has no power over water. They should have known that in the first place.
It's a good question. Because when they, how are they able to have, if it was Masik, it wasn't Masik Shafim.
We learned
it was from water.
I think it's from Rashi that
from blood, you mean? From blood?
That, yeah, that when we get to, and when we get to Kinim, that's right. When they say Esbel Kim, and then he says that's because now it's something that they know that Kishuv has no power over something.
They should know from the first Makkah from the...
Because they knew if it was water, there wasn't
much power over water, then they should have known it from down.
So it's a good question. Some people even say that by the Makkah of Kinim, it's Esbel Elohim, like lowercase g. Yeah. They thought it was Avodah Zarah. They still attributed it to something other than Hashem. Some people explain, but it's certainly a question you could be asked on this pshat. Right. Okay, that was the first Mishnah. Does anyone have any questions on the first Mishnah? Okay, let's move on to the second Mishnah. Okay, so we already know all the intricate details.
This was all one Mishnah for the Mishnah.
Yeah, the second Mishnah in Shas, which happens to be the Mishnah we're about to do, starts on Testament Beis. The first Mishnah is on Beis Amud Aleph, right? This contrasts the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah asks, Me'emasei Karnei Shema be'arbit, and now this is Me'emasei Karnei Shema be'shachros. And of course, as we remember a few days back, maybe it was a while back, that the significance of Ma'ariv and then Shachros, two explanations we gave, was either the Pasuk Vihi Erev Vihi Boker, the Pasuk says first evening then morning, or based on the Kriya Shema itself, is B'shach B'chol Kamecha. First talks about the night lying down, and only afterwards B'chamecha in the morning. That's the reason why this Mishnah about the morning is mentioned after Marv. Okay. Me'emasekon Shema B'shachros. So when is, apparently the earliest time a person can say the Shema in the morning. So we know the earliest time a person can say the Shema at night was when the Kohanim Nechnas L'mecha B'Trumasan, which we said was Seitz HaKochavim, when the stars come out. Even though, of course, we do it earlier, and there's a lot of different explanations why we're allowed to do that. But nonetheless, when is the earliest time a person can say the Shema in the morning? So the Gemara answers, Mishiyakir. Sometimes you hear the words, oh, Mishiyakir. Mishiyakir means from the time you recognize. From the time you recognize what? So we're going to end up seeing the Mishnah has a couple of answers. The Gemara is going to come up with a few more answers of what is Mishiyakir. And then we're going to end up answering the most famous explanation, which we'll also see Tosfos on that in a moment too. But in the meantime, continuing the Mishnah, Mishiyakir bin Tcheles Lelava. When a person is able to distinguish between Tcheles and Lavan. Well, that sound, Techeles, is blue, and Lavan is white. But if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi tells us, there's only Rashi on this Mishnah, Techeles Yarok, who? Yarok is green, right? It's interesting. Vikara Vatsava Karti, it's comparable to the dye, which is Karti, Shikorin Parish. Karti is a leek, which is green. So the question exactly is, Tcheles, what is Tcheles? Is it blue or is it it's a certain bluish green, right? Because what is it on the circle with the wheel? You have red, orange, yellow, green, blue, right? Green and blue are right next to each other, so they're very
blue
close.
Blue
right?
Blue and go out.
Right, but what's the color right before blue? Roy G. Biv.
G.
Green, right? So green and blue on the in a rainbow, the colors really
close.
Yeah, they complement or they mix with one another. So that's how Rashi actually feels that Tcheles Lavan means a bluish green.
Why is Tcheles? It's just plain blue.
Oh, the question is when it says Tcheles, exactly what is that referring to? So you see Tosos, the first Tosos, you're not going to see the whole thing, but if you see about three lines, the third to last line, the last word, there's a little dot in the middle of the Tosfos, and there's an acronym, and then afterwards it says, Yesh Lefaresh, that those are explained, which is a few lines, we'll see the very end of this Tosfos. Yesh Lefaresh, Bein Techeles Shabbat, but Sitzes, Shehoye Kavua Lo Techeles, right? So it's perhaps when it says between Techeles and Lavan, Tosfos is explaining it has something to do with the tzitzis, because, of course, you wear the tzitzis, third paragraph of Shema, you're supposed to wear talus or talus katan, tzitzis, whatever. So, how are you able to recognize? So it makes sense. You look at your tzitzis, and you can see the white strings, and then you see the one tcheles, the one blue string. So if you can distinguish which one is one, which one is this, which one's blue, which one's the tcheles, which one's the white one, says Tosfos, that's what it means to be Mishiyakir. So it makes sense, because it's right there, because that's part of the mitzvah of Tzitzis. So Rashi explains a little bit differently than Tosfos. Okay, but continuing the Gemara says, the second Mishnah rather, Rebbe Elazar Oimer ben Tcheles Akarti. Right? See, Rashi felt that Tcheles was karov, was close to green. And this opinion is that it's literally green, right? Completely green. And of course, out of the two opinions, one who says, let's just translate as blue and white, and the other one says blue and green, the one who says blue and green would be a later time, because the colors are close to one another, so it would take more light outside to be able to distinguish between those two colors. Between blue and white, it's easier to distinguish between such dramatically different colors, so that would be an earlier time to say the Shema. So that would be like the Machlokas, that the first opinion, which we can call the Tanakhama, feel that the Zman is earlier than the opinion of Rebbe Elazar. Okay. So that's all the Mishnah says. And then the Mishnah, as we saw in the first Mishnah, not only talks about the earliest time to say the Shema, but also the last time. Ve'gomra, okay, and you finish it, should be done, ad ha-Netzacham. You should say it by Netzacham. That's the latest time to say the Shema. Netzacham, when the sun rises, which is Netzacham, as we said before, is later than Amud HaShachar. Netzacham is the time when you can already start seeing.
That's the
latest time. So it says, Ad Netzacham. Of course, we don't hold like that, but the mission is going to be explained when we get to the Gemara a little bit. That's perhaps the best time, right? That's the best way of saying the Shema, is that it should be done by Netzachama, so immediately you daven Shemoneh Esrei.
That's the next minute. That's
Netz. That's why it's called Netz.
Important minute.
That's what it means. You should, which means you should finish it. You finish the Shema. This is really the best. That's what we end up learning from this Mishnah. The best way of saying the Shema is finishing it by Nates, so that immediately after the Shema, you start the Shema Esrei at Nates. Right. So the Shema is not at Nates Acham. That's when the Shema Esrei is. Supposed to say it before, so that when you finish it, the Gomra, which is the significance of that word, you finish it by Netz HaChama, so this way you're able to immediately start the Shemona Esrei, which we'll see the last Tosos talking about, again, going to be the best time. We'll get to that eventually. But continuing in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua, fortunately for Rabbi Yeshua, he helps us out and says you can sleep a little bit. Omer Ad Shal Shos. You have until 3 hours. Third hour, Shekein Derech Melachim Lamud B'Shal Shos, because that's the time which kings would get up by the third hour, and the Gemara is going to end up telling us that when the kings would get up, they would be Ovid Avodah Zarah, they would worship idols, and that's no longer the time to be Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim. Hashem doesn't want at that time to accept the yoke of heaven. Hashem wants us to preempt them in our relationship and spirituality. So you have until Shal Shos. And what it means until Shalosh Shos, of course, is Shos Manios. Let's say on a perfect 6 a.m., 6 p.m. day, that would mean 9 o'clock in the morning. Of course, if we would look at that calendar right over there, it doesn't say 9 o'clock. It's a little eye examination. You can see that up there? 8:43. Because in the winter, there's less hours of sunlight, so therefore each hour is less than 60 minutes. Shorter, exactly. All right. So that's the reason why it ends then. Okay, so that's that. And then the Mishnah concludes and says, Akari Mekan V'Elech, one who reads the Shema from then on, it's already now, it's 11:30 in the morning, and you didn't say the Shema yet, Lo Hissid, you didn't lose, Ka'adam HaKari B'Torah, you're just like a person who read the Torah. Okay, and the last line is...
He doesn't get credit for davening.
You didn't get the schar for saying Kriya Shema. But Kriya Shema, which is also in the Torah, it's in the Torah Shema. Right. If you didn't say it within that time, fine. And that's for those that are, you know, let's say in these months, a person who davens, let's say, a 9 o'clock minyan, maybe the 8 o'clock minyan could maybe just will daven by then.
Well, now we're catching it. A couple of weeks ago, we were not.
Right.
But actually, we were, because when you do the karbanos, you say Shema.
Right, well, that's the thing. If Kriya Shema, but 9 o'clock minyan, it's at 9:10, so you can say it then, that you'll be all set. Fine. So that's something to be cautious of.
Some say that you're saying just
the
you're not saying
the whole
thing.
So, yeah, we
all
say that.
Okay. So the last line of our Mishnah said, a huge chiddush, and I'm saying that sarcastically, it says if you didn't say the Shema until after the Zman, you didn't lose out. It's like a person who was Kari B'Torah. So the Mepharshim ask, that sounds pretty obvious, right? Obviously, what do you mean? It's part of the Torah. So if you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of saying the Shema, but you're, of course you're... Why does the Mishnah need to tell us that? Lohisid ka'adam ha'kari b'Torah. So it's brought down that he says, that's brought down in a sefer called Adas Yaakov. He says that afal pi shikara l'shem mitzvah Kriya Shema. You don't know any of these laws. At 11:30 in the morning, you start davening, you start saying the Shema, and before you do so, in your mind you say, I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema b'zmano, and I want to be mekabel upon myself the Ol Malchus Shemayim, the yoke of heaven. You also do not lose out in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So you wouldn't think that perhaps by you having that mindset that I'm not doing this for learning Torah, I'm doing it to accept this mitzvah of saying the Shema, even though you don't fulfill the mitzvah, you still get the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, even though. And he continues and says, Memeila de Kriya Shema Teuna Nami Birchas HaTorah Kodim Shiyikra. It's interesting. The question is, you know, it's Birchas HaTorah before you learn. So the Kriya Shema is something, therefore, also some learn, the significance of this Mishnah is that you have to say Birchas HaTorah before the Shema. And he concludes, he says, V'ein daim l'psukim sh'aymer b'slichos. The Ramah paskins that certain psukim, which we say at Slichos, which is before Kriyashma, before the brachos, we say brachos afterwards. Kivan shein omrim ela derech tachanunim yish omrim gam bli berachos haTorah. The Ramah paskins that you don't have to actually say berachos haTorah but before Slichos, because you're not saying them as part of learning Torah, even though you're quoting psukim from Tanakh, right? But that's not the reason why you're saying them. So therefore, you don't have to say Berachas HaTorah. However, for the Kriyat Shema, a person should.
I guess he doesn't have to listen to the landing. Parshas Ekev?
What is that?
You have the Shema in Ekev?
Oh, that's...
So Yossi over here, so maybe right. He doesn't have to listen to that part of the landing in the shul.
Oh, well, can't hurt. All right. That's the Mishnah. Let's now see the Gemara. Okay? The Gemara says, Ma bein techelos l'lavon. What does it mean? The difference between blue and white, right? So Tosus kind of helped us out a little bit. What exactly does it mean between blue and white? But what exactly does Gemara wants to understand this? He says, Ilema ben gevava de amrachiura. Perhaps it means the difference between a ball of wool which is white, legevava de amra de chelta, as opposed to another ball of wool which is blue. So you have blue over here and you have white over here, two completely separate things. So the Gemara says that can't be that, because Hubble Laila Nami made a yade. Even at night you can distinguish between the two. Even the smallest amount of light you can distinguish between two items, which one is here, one is there. Blue and white, very easily discernible. So therefore that's not what it's talking about. Ella says the Gemara Ben Techelos Shiba Lulav and Shiba means the blue in it and the white in it, which means it's mixed within one another. It's, let's say, the same string, and within the same object there's some blue and some white in it, so it's not as clear because perhaps they're all together. It's hard to be able to pull and distinguish which is blue and white. So therefore that's what it's talking about. Tanya, we learned in a Tosefta, Rameir Omer, he says, what does it mean, Mishiakir? What does it mean from the time you recognize? So it's Mishiakir ben Zeib l'Kelev. It's not talking about between different colors, but it's when you can distinguish between different animals, right? Between...
But you can't tell the difference in broad daylight between the wolf and the dog.
No?
Yes, you can.
Apparently they are able to. So that's the time, if you can recognize between these two similar animals, then it's enough to, then you can start some Nishma. Rabbi Akiva, Omer, and it's interesting, he says the word Kelev, and of course we mentioned already on Daf Gimel about the significance of the Kelev in the middle of the night. The Kelev, the barking, so there's some connection between the reciting of the Shema and the Mishmaros. We said that was perhaps even Chatzos, like in Mitzrayim, the dogs didn't bark. So this also, there's some connection between the Shema and animals and dogs. So that's depending on Meir.
I don't think he's talking about the difference in the bark of the...
No, he's talking about the actual physical... Right, appearance. Right, but it's interesting, again, how it mentions a Kelev, of all things. Rabbi Kiva Omer ben Chamor l'Orud. Between a donkey and an Orud, I believe it's translated as a mule. Okay? The Acherim Omrim, and this kind of gives away always, you can always tell where the halacha usually is, because by the word of Acherim, by the Vav in Acherim, there's a little Aleph, and that the purpose of those little letters is it brings you to the top right, and that's the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, which quotes either the Shulchan Aruch or the Rambam. So the fact that you have a letter by this opinion probably means that this is going to be quoted somewhere either in the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch, the two primary sources of halacha. The Acherim Omrim, so, and the others say, and sometimes the Acherim, it's interesting, the Acherim is, this is the same Tosefta as the first opinion of Rameir. We know that one of Rameir's primary teachers was Acher. So some actually say that Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, who's called the other one because he went off the derech, is this guy, Acherim. Acherim Omrim, Mishiyares Chaver Rochav Dald Amos, V'Akiranda. This is the halacha, actually, that when you can recognize your friend the distance of four Amos, then that's enough to stay the Shema. And on this, Amar Rav Huna, halacha k'Acherim, the halacha indeed is like the Acherim. We'll see just four more words. Omer Abayi, with tefillin kacherim. Also, when it comes to putting on the tefillin, also it's the same inyan that should be Mashiach from the time that you can recognize. Okay. Which makes sense, because the part you're supposed to say the Shema with the tefillin on, otherwise it's considered like made edus sheker al atzmo. It's like you're saying false testimony, you're saying ukshartem, and nonetheless you're not wearing tefillin. So if you look at this Tosfos, it's a very important Tosfos. I guess all Tosfos are important. This is a nice famous one. Tosfos says, Tosfos Dibur Machal, Acherim Omrim Ad Shira Chavero, until you can see your friend in the distance of four amos. Yerushalmi, it says in Yerushalmi, Bama Anu Kaiman Kayomen. What exactly is this talking about? What are we, and what? How are we establishing this case of your friend? What type of friend? Ibaragil, is it a good friend that you're accustomed to be around all the time? Feel Barachim Tvei, Chachim Bei. Even from more than four amos, you can be wise. You can distinguish. The guy you know, so you can look way far away. You can see his shadow and the makeup of his body. You know him. He's very close to you. You know him. The Ibish Einu Ragil, some guy you've never met before in your life, you're not accustomed to. So I feel Karav Al-Gabe Lukhachme. Even very close, you're not going to be able to know. Right? Tifa Baragil, but Einu Ragil. So what is the answer? So he says, it's Baragil. The Einu Ragil means you're accustomed, but not really accustomed. You're a social acquaintance. You're somewhat can know this person. Kiadin Achsanya De'asi Lakitzin. So it's just like you have this guest. So the point is that when it says Acherim, says Achirenu Chavero, it means someone who's partially knowledge about you. You don't know him very well, you know him a little bit, and that's the time. So that's the Acherimam. That's Mishirenu Eskaver Rachatan Amos V'Acherimenu. And the halacha is not only when it comes to the Kriya Shema, but also when it comes to Tefillin, that a person needs to wait until you can recognize your friend that far away. Okay? That's the opinion of the Cherem, that's the Halach, which we'll see in a few moments. Let's continue with the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, Omer Abayi.
Wait, you're putting the tefillin on before you sang Kriya Shema, so it's an earlier time.
Tefillin ki Acherim.
You're putting the tefillin on first, right?
You put on the tefillin first, right?
So if you could already recognize the tefillin, I mean, if at the time of the tefillin, you recognize your friend, so right. Certainly, obviously.
So you can put on your tefillin, then you say the Shema right after.
Then you recognize the Shema.
Right. So it's an interesting, because even though you could say the Shema at that point, you should still wear your tefillin. But of course, it's also on, let's say, on Shabbos, for example. On Shabbos, you don't have to wait to put on your tefillin. There's no tefillin. So
that's true.
So you can just say the Shema immediately, Mashiacher. Okay, the Gemara continues, L'kriya Shema Kivasikin. The best time to say the Shema is Kivasikin. Just like similar to our Mishnah. The Yom Rav Yochanan Vasikin Hayigormen Osa'inam Netzachama. That the Vasikin, they would finish it, the Shema, by Netzachama. In order that they would be able to daven the Shema Nesrei immediately at Netz. In order to be able to daven Shemon Esrei immediately at Netzachama, right when the sun begins to rise, whatever time that is, you have to first, of course, say the Shema immediately before that. So therefore, that's the best time to say the Shema. Tanya Nami Hachi, we also learned something similar to this. In the Braisa, it says, Vasikin Hayi Gormenos in Netzachama, they would say the Shema by and up to Netzachama, sunrise, Kineshiyis Mokul Tvila, and then immediately they would daven. They would be Samakul Tfil, which means they would say immediately after the Shema, the Shemon Esrei, without hesitation, and then you'll find that they daven during the day, because they daven the Shemon Esrei at Netz, at Netzacham.
I think that's when they brought the Karban Tumet also, huh?
Tumet Shel Shachar, yeah. That's the, right, yeah. Okay. So far, so good? Excellent. All right, we have a few more lines. Omer Rav Zeira. Rav Zeira says, Mikro, what pasuk do you have to support this idea of davening at such an early time? So he answers, Yerucha im Shemesh. So the pasuk says that those who fear you will be by the sun, v'lifnei yerech dor dorim, and by the moon, generations. So it says those inferior are always going to daven by the sun, which means by the sunrise right away in the beginning. And we're actually going to see in the fourth parak some people daven im dim dum nechama, as the Gemara says, by the redness of the sun, which is at the very last moments before the sun sets, daven mincha. Heyad Rabbi Yehuda ben Alikim Mishum Kihilo Kedisha de Rishalayim. He testified in the name of his holy congregation, Yerushalayim. Kol hasomech gul tefila. This is a very important line over here. Anyone who's somech gul tefila, you say Gwal Yisrael, and immediately afterwards you daven Shmoneh Esrei, Einu nizer kol hayom kulo. You're not going to be damaged the entire day. So apparently, as long as you daven Shmoneh Esrei immediately after the Shema, you never have any problems. You can Einu nizer kol hayom kulo, which is a pretty nice thing. Of course, if you see Tosos over here, the last Tosos on the page, we'll go back to the Gemara in a moment. Tosos says, "Kol hasomek gula tefila einu nizur." Does anyone see that last Tosos?
Yeah.
Okay. So the entire Frektosis, what are you talking about? Kol olam somek gula tefila. Nebuch, we live in such a generation that everyone is somek gula tefila. You know, halavai, we have a small percentage of Jews that daven every day. But in the days of Tosos, he could say everyone, the whole world is somek gula tefila. Big deal. My rebusi derav. We're going to see the Gemara in a moment that the guy was so ecstatic that when he would daven somech gula tefila that you couldn't remove the smile that was plastered on his face. He was so happy. So emphatizes the Yishlomer when the Gemara says being somech gula tefila doesn't just mean you daven the Shemoneh Esrei right after Gual Yisrael. It's not just how you did it, it's also
when
exactly. Yesh lomer the halchi k'aymer kol somech gula tefila kivasikin shekoren kriyas shema kodem anetz but tefila achar anetz. It's not just that you said it that way, but it's that you did it at the best, most opportune time. That's when a person will eino nizik kol hayom. All right, we're just going to see the four more lines in the Gemara. We'll stop at that point. The Gemara says, Rav Zera asks a question. How can you tell me this falsehood, this sheker, that a person who's somech gula tefila, that no damage will ever happen to him, only good things are going to happen, they're not going to have any problems? What are you talking about? Va'ana samchi, I was somech gula tefila, I, Rav Zera, was somech gula tefila, v'itzki, and it was mazik, it was a terrible damage, a great problem happened to me. So Armelay, they asked the question, oh really? I feel bad for you, you were hurt, it must be something terrible, devastating, what happened? Mamayis, but my izak, how were you affected? What was your nizikin? What was your damages? So he said, I'll tell you, a terrible thing happened. The amti asla be malka, that they forced me to bring flowers, and asas, like a hadas, or a myrtle, to the be malka. I had to bring flowers to the king. I was summoned to have to do that. I wasn't allowed, no choice. So I wasted my whole day bringing flowers to some no good king. So it was a waste of my day. It was terrible. More answers are beautiful answers. What are you talking about? It's not a damage. Hasam nami mi boil chumev agra l'mix the api malka. Not only were you not damaged, if you had the opportunity, you should even pay money. You should pay wages to have the opportunity to see the face of a king. A person should always pursue, run to meet a king, a Jewish king. Not only a Jewish king, even a non-Jewish king, because if you marry, you'll be able to distinguish between a Malchi Yisrael and a Malchi Akum. So he said that for you to be able to see a king is not a damage, it's a good thing. And that's one of the tragedies that we live in a generation, we don't have a king. If you go through all the different mashalim, almost every single mashal is always with a king, right? And the nimshal, of course, is God, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? So, you know, we appreciate the mashal and we appreciate the nimshal. But the reality is, if you don't live in a generation where you understand the power of what it is to have a king and what a king really is, it's really hard to be able to understand what it means to be melech malchim lochim. So the fact that you're able to see a melech, a king, that also is able to empower you. And some explain that that's the explanation, that's the significance of the asa. An asa, as we said, is a hadas. What is significant about a hadas? A hadas has a beautiful smell, has a beautiful fragrance. When it comes to its taste, don't do this at home. Don't recommend eating a hadas. It's not good for you. Right? So they explain that a hadas is what represents Malchei Akum. Malchei Yisrael is a king which has substance, someone who is not just a show-off, but also someone who's a spiritual individual that you can truly learn something substantial of true substance. A Malchei Akum is someone that also has that grandeur, that power, that majesty about him, but if you would actually sit down with him, he's an empty shell. He has nothing spiritual about him. There's no essence, no substance within him. So that's the same idea of the Hadas. The Asa that you were going to give the Malchei Akum is because he represents a beautiful fragrance. However, there's really no taste. There's nothing inside. However, if you're at least able to bring that Asa, you'll be able to see what it is like to have a Malchei Akum and then be able to even appreciate even greater the Malchei Yisrael, the Jewish king. Stop here. Yeah.